On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to answer these questions. What can the Warriors do to save their season now that Jimmy Butler is out with an ACL injury? And is it time, finally, for the Golden State Warriors to make a trade? Plus, what's going wrong with the New York Knicks? And is Karl Anthony Towns to blame? All this and more coming up right now. Welcome, 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 welcome to The Big Number. I'm Tom Haberstroh, and yeah, Dan's already feeling it. My man, your man, Dan Devine. Dan, how are you?
I mean, I'm good. I've got some nicks and some bruises. My knee's not feeling quite the way I'd like it to be feeling right now, but I think all things considered, I'm doing all right. It could be a heck of a lot worse. We could be feeling the way the Golden State Warriors are feeling this morning, Tom. So without any further ado, I think let's get to it. Let's put up some numbers this week. What is this week's big number?
This week's big number is 3-6. That is the Warriors' record since acquiring Jimmy Butler when they don't have Jimmy Butler. 3-6, Dan. Not great. And that's with Steph Curry and Draymond Green for a lot of that in that 9-game sample. But I think it underscores the reality for the Warriors right now is that Jimmy Butler was such an important piece to everything that they do, both ends of the floor. And the latest on Tuesday night, second night of a back-to-back, they're hosting the Toronto Raptors, and they lost 145 to 127. It's the most that the Warriors have allowed in a non-overtime game since 2010, Dan. This looks like a 27 win team without Jimmy Butler in that small sample. And last night on Tuesday night, when they got absolutely destroyed, and this was with Steph and Draymond on the floor, they couldn't stop the Toronto Raptors. And that's the, like no one is looking at the Toronto Raptors like they're the 2017 Warriors, right? Like they're not looking at this team like this is even the 2019, Raptors that won the title. This is a Raptors team that has been top half of the Eastern Conference, has been a solid team this season, but in no way should, with Draymond Green in uniform at home, should they be giving up 145. And so, Dan, what did last night's game, or I guess just in general, what do you think this Jimmy Butler injury means for the Warriors? And like, what kind of holes does he present now that he's out with an ACL injury that we've now learned is an ACL injury tear that is going to knock him out for the rest of the season? Trade deadline's here in a couple weeks, but this is a pretty big hole that they have to fill, as evidenced by a Tuesday night's loss.
Yeah. You don't want to totally jump out the window on a night where Emmanuel quickly makes 7 threes. You know, that has not been his sort of standard operating procedure since joining the Raptors. However, it's a concern, right? Like the premise for the Warriors as a contender was elite defense and good enough offense, especially when you didn't have Stephen Curry available, right? Like that was like kind of the worrying thing about where the Warriors were a year ago before they made the Jimmy Butler trade. It's like, even with Steph playing at an all-NBA level, you were not a consistently high-level offense. So Jimmy comes in and sort of does, as we've talked about a number of times on this show, he just raises the floor and the ceiling together, where you're augmenting what Steph Curry does. You're taking pressure off him and making life easier on him, thus allowing you to get the most out of him. And you're also now providing like a new pathway to generating offense when Steph is off the floor, because you could run things through Jimmy in a way that you couldn't really run, consistently generating good possessions through anybody else in non-Steph minutes. And so that goes away now. And so the Warriors actually scored pretty efficiently against the Raptors on a long enough timeline. I think there's real concerns about how effectively you're going to be able to generate offense. And then if you are not able to do that and you're giving up the store on the other end of the floor because your best wing-sized perimeter defender, and even though, Jimmy, long in the tooth getting up there in his career, still, not an elite lockdown defender, but still big, strong, smart, versatile, able to suss out what you're trying to do and, disrupt a possession, get a hand in a passing lane, force a turnover, that kind of thing. Like there aren't as many like-sized players in the Warriors rotation. There's one that doesn't wind up in the rotation a lot, I'm sure we'll get back to him. And then the ones that are available, you know, your other sort of forward and, you know, big wing size guys, they're not Jimmy Butler. Like, through no fault of their own, there aren't very many Jimmy Butlers out there. And so the challenge for the Warriors here is going to be, it's like, how do you, you're not replacing one guy or a guy who does one thing. You're replacing a guy who does kind of everything at a top 15, top 20 level, and trying to do that midstream a couple weeks before the trade deadline in a situation where you've got to make some tough decisions about which salaries are going where and who's, you know, what the demand looks like and who is going in and going out. Like, it's a tough time to do that. It would be, there's no great time to lose Jimmy Butler. I guess if you're going to do it before the trade deadline, is better than not, but still an awfully tough puzzle to solve for Mike Dunleavy Jr. in that front office these next couple of weeks.
Yeah. All right. So I kind of, there's a lot there. I kind of think that what we're seeing from the Golden State Warriors is a devastating injury and also a Stephen Curry and Draymond Green that clearly on Tuesday night were emotionally just spent, second night of a back-to-back with the fact that Jimmy Butler's out, underscores how important he is to the team. But they have to have real tough conversations, like you said, right now, looking at the numbers where with Jimmy Butler, they're a 55-win pace team, and without him, they're a 27-win pace team. And you have to be pragmatic about the fact that going forward, there is no contract or basically no major contract on the books for the Warriors past 26, past next season. And so with Jimmy Butler, you can be okay with that. Like, okay, we got big contracts and Draymond and Steph, and we're all in for next year. But with no Jimmy Butler, what can you expect from this team? And I think you owe it to Stephen Curry to reload. I think you do. I think Mike Dunleavy Jr. gets it. That's why he traded for Jimmy Butler at the deadline last year, is understanding that the window with Steph Curry averaging what he is now and still playing at a high level, that you owe it to Steph Curry. They're the most valuable franchise in sports, Dan. With Steph Curry on the floor, they're the most valuable franchise in sports. Before Steph Curry came about, they were nothing. They were just another team. And yes, some of that coincided with Joe Lacob taking over the team. But the reason why they're the most valuable franchise in sports is because of Stephen Curry. It's because of 30, and you got to do right by him. And now with Jimmy Butler out for the season and majority of next season, I'd imagine, with an ACL injury for a guy who's 36, I feel like they're at a serious crossroads here. Stephen Curry, I don't think, is going to make a trade demand if they stand pat at the deadline. But I see three paths going forward for the Warriors. One, Dan, they stand pat, right? And given what Mike Dunleavy said at the press conference after the injury, it seems like he is going to reevaluate things after a couple weeks, but they have no plans right now of trading Jonathan Kuminga. We're going to get to him.
Freudian slip. Yeah, right.
Freudian slip. They have no plans to trade Jonathan Kuminga, because at first you need some demand on that trade demand. We're going to get to that. But does not, according to Anthony Slater of ESPN, Mike Dunleavy said he does not envision he will trade Jimmy Butler's contract and believes Butler will rehab and return to help the team at some point next season. Great job, Mike Dunleavy. I think this is what you need to say, because this is leverage. I think this is posturing. I think this is him saying, look, we're not going to go crazy here and be desperate to try to add to Stephen Curry and Draymond Green right now. I think this is what a smart GM does, is he puts out the message in the marketplace. Look, if you're going to get any of our assets, we have basically all of our first round draft picks going forward. We're not just going to give those things away for free. We're not desperate. We're not in desperation mode yet. So I think we do have to take that with a grain of salt. And Mike Dunleavy did say, look, we're not out here definitely trading Jimmy Butler and his $54 million contract for this season. What I do think, Dan, is a very realistic scenario that they don't do a blockbuster trade, right? Like, you're looking at this Warriors situation and saying, Steph's healthy, Draymond's healthy. Maybe they just kind of kick the can down the road and they don't do a huge swing, but maybe they hit like a single or a double in the trade market.
Yeah. So in that vein, and we mentioned the name Jonathan Kuminga, who, as anybody who's been paying attention to the league for a little while now knows, things haven't worked out super hot with him in Golden State. Whose fault? Maybe everybody's. Hard to say. In any event, he was became eligible for a trade on January 15th. The second that became the clock turned midnight, I think there was a report that he was demanding a trade away from the Golden State Warriors. And this was brought up to Mike Dunleavy Jr. at that, as you mentioned, the sort of post Jimmy injury press conference, where the question was like, you know, basically, what do you make of the trade demand? And Mike Dunleavy Jr.'s answer was essentially, I'm aware of the demand, but in order for there to, in terms of demands, when you make a demand, there needs to be demand on the market. And so what he is saying there, it's right. I mean, and the joke I made in the aftermath was like, he was always a pretty good shooter when he played, you know, that was pretty, you know, nice shot, Mike. But the issue that is that you're shooting yourself in the foot a little bit, right? Like you are acknowledging there really isn't a whole lot out there that you can get for Jonathan Kuminga. The rounds of reporting over many months about what might be a destination for Kuminga, who might be interested in Jonathan Kuminga, a lot of it has focused on the Sacramento Kings. And that's funny a little because oftentimes these days when the Sacramento Kings come up, it's because they're just like, well, who would make that deal? I don't know, the Kings? Because that's sort of where we've arrived at. We've been at Ranadive in that operation. But there's been a consistent idea of like, we're looking for a long-term answer at the four. We want somebody to play there. If there's not great demand for Jonathan Kuminga and the Kings are still like, hey, we're here. We're still interested, which I think based on Slater's most recent reporting that they were one of the teams that was listed as actually still engaged there. Give me something pretty simple and clean and let's get done. Malik Monk, Keon Ellis, going to Golden State. Jonathan Kuminga goes to Sacramento. I will leave it to people smarter than me to figure out if picks need to go one way or the other with that. The impediment from the Warriors' perspective is Malik Monk. As you mentioned, their books are pretty clean a couple of years out. Malik Monk still has a couple of years left on his current contract. I believe like $41 million or so after this season with a player option on the final year. So there's some impediments there. You need somebody who can score and generate offense for other people, especially when Steph's off the floor. That has become a more dire concern in the absence of Jimmy Butler. Malik Monk's not perfect. He makes an already small Warriors team smaller. Keon Ellis would also make them smaller. But this gets you a kind of Jordan Poole-ish sort of figure. I mean, you look at their stats from like the years that Poole was in Golden State and the years that Monk's been in Sacramento and the style of player as that instant offense guy off the bench, guy can run pick and roll for you, generate offense. That I could see it, you know. And then Keon Ellis is basically like, I think all of the NBA nerds look at this guy and are like, he is clearly a positive and helpful player, especially on the defensive end of the floor. How come the Kings, who stink, keep taking him off the floor and not really maximizing what you can be there? Now, he's shot the ball terribly this season. He was pretty good shooting the ball for 2 years before that. I think that's a more relevant sample. And he's like a 6'4 long defender who's good across the backcourt spots, who I bet in a Golden State system alongside guys like Draymond and, you know, Gary Payton II and whoever, like, I bet he'd play up there. So maybe Keon Ellis is the price of taking on the money for the multiple years owed to Malik Monk. Malik Monk gives you a shot in the arm on the offensive end. You bid farewell to the Jonathan Kuminga situation. And yeah, it's not a blockbuster, but maybe that's a decent piece of business for all involved. And then Jonathan Kuminga gets to try to see if he can be a star level forward, a starter, a consistent 35 minutes a game guy, putting up 20 in Sacramento. Maybe that's the most like neatest solution for all involved, although it's maybe isn't changing your championship equity if you're the Golden State Warriors. It's definitely not for the Sacramento Kings, but maybe not also for the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, Kuminga coming back and scoring 20 plus in a blowout is just perfect. It's just great. Steve Kerr hadn't played him in a month, and then he comes back in a blowout off the bench and gets his 20. And you know what? The Kings might look at that and say, "That's my guy." 20 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists in some garbage time for the Warriors. And look, I think that is a solid move if you're the Warriors, and if you're the Kings. Whatever, Jonathan Kuminga, high upside guy who all of those pieces in Sacramento just don't seem to fit. It's like it's the place of misfit toys, it feels like to me, with the Kings. I don't know what do you do with Sabonis? Like, can you place? I don't know. But let's get to some actual big blockbuster names here, because that to me might be the most reasonable move, right? You move on from the Jonathan Kuminga thing and you get two real rotation guys to help you in the absence of Jimmy Butler. But it, you mentioned Anthony Slater's report about the Kings might be interested in Jonathan Kuminga services. There's another team in there that he mentioned, which was the Dallas Mavericks. And this is fascinating because I think the Jimmy Butler trade makes the Dallas Mavericks even more likely of a trade destination for Jonathan Kuminga because of the Jimmy Butler contract. Jimmy Butler's contract this year is at $54 million. And that is really relevant when you're talking about Anthony Davis, that guy, Anthony Davis, that doesn't really make all that much sense for the Mavs going forward if you got Cooper Flagg. So here's the deal that I'm looking at. AD's got 3 years left on his deal. Jimmy Butler has 2 years left in his deal. The reason why this trade is interesting is a couple. One, Anthony Davis helps the Warriors try to pry open that championship window and keep it open. He's out with a finger injury, could be back in a month or so, and he might be back in time for the playoff push. Secondly, the name right there, you see it, Klay Thompson. Reunion back in Golden State. Bring him back to the Bay. Look, yes, we love this. It's a heartwarming tale of Klay Thompson coming back home to the Bay Area, reunites with Stephen Curry. Jimmy Butler gives the Dallas Mavericks an expiring contract next season. You don't have to pay Anthony Davis for another 3 seasons. You basically have to pay Jimmy Butler in the expiring deal next year. And that actually becomes, I think, even more of a valuable piece this offseason if a team is trying to get off money and maybe throw in some picks, that the Dallas Mavericks could flip Jimmy Butler this summer and get some more draft picks out of that, because $54 million, you could get some draft picks with that expiring contract for a team that's trying to get off some money. Then you throw in that the Warriors have like 5 first round picks that they could put into a deal. Some, not necessarily all 5 into a deal, but you send a first round pick over to Dallas as part of taking on Jimmy Butler's contract. And then the Nets as a facilitator, this might be my favorite part here, D'Angelo Russell goes back to Brooklyn Nets for a third time. Let's make it happen. Dan, that's my first blockbuster fake Jimmy Butler trade proposal. Anthony Davis, Klay Thompson, and Dante Exum, just to make the salary work, goes to Golden State. Jimmy Butler, Jonathan Kuminga, and a first goes to Dallas. You don't have to say whether, you know, you like this deal or you don't like this deal, but can you just say for me that this is fun? This is a really fun fake trade.
It's fun. It's definitely fun in the injuries off NBA 2K version of this of the sport. Like, but I think you're looking the emotional component of Klay Thompson back in the Bay can't. 10 out of 10, no notes. D'Angelo Russell going back to Brooklyn, where things, you know, they fell apart in LA, and then they got
you could be waived upon arrival. Sure.
But he's also been like he's been like an itinerant point guard for the last like 6 years. He's kind of like going around team to team, and like he's helpful, and then he's not, and he's helpful, and then he's not. Also, being like him being make weight in a Warriors trade with pick stuff going the other after the KD to Brooklyn, like that's interesting to me. I find that compelling. The idea, the heart of this really gets back to, and I will, as we discuss some of the other opportunities too, is do the Warriors believe that the only thing important, like the most important thing now, is like it has to be just what can we throw, the next thing to throw at opening Steph's window, right? Like they find themselves in a situation similar to what the Bucks have been in with Giannis, right? Like, we've wound up losing our shirt at the craps table right now. All right, the only solution is to double down. We have to keep going. Like there is no out that involve, you know, while we are in this set of circumstances, we have to just keep going. And so the idea of turning Jimmy into the myriad injury concerns that involve Anthony Davis, that would give me some real pause, especially as Anthony Davis like is still out again. And, you know, you're looking at, well, what is the likelihood of this improving things in the second half of the year for us as we get past the trade deadline into the playoff situation? How confident do you feel that he will be on the court come April?
Right.
Let alone.
But you got Jimmy Butler hurt. You got Jimmy Butler hurt for a year plus. He might be done.
Yes.
He might be done. So if you're the Warriors, you're not going to be able to go and say, hey, give me Giannis, give me Luka Doncic, give me Nikola Jokic. They can't. They're not in a position of strength unless there's a team that wants to get off long-term money, which brings me to Anthony Davis. And also the second team that I the blockbuster here is Zion Williamson. Zion Williamson is often injured. He's a guy that it doesn't seem like he has a future in New Orleans, or at least it doesn't seem like a guy coming off the bench for a bunch of this season.
How could you even tell? Yeah.
Yeah. what are the... I'm just reading stuff, you know, just kind of sure. Reading the tea leaves here. But it does seem like for me, Zion Williamson could be had in a Jimmy Butler swap, in a sense that they're going to get off of Zion Williamson again, like Anthony Davis, longer term money. And with the Warriors, is they would be doubling down on a talent where Rick Celebrini, the head of medical and the head of athletic trainer, the head of player health there for the Warriors, would have a pretty tall task in front of him, is making sure Zion Williamson in a new environment, right, change of scenery, maybe in the Warriors organization, feels like he would be able to get his stuff together and stay and try to stay healthier if it is possible. There's another guy there, Kevon Looney. Heartwarming story. Another storybook turnaround and get your guy, Loon Dog, back for the Warriors. And Trey Murphy III, of course, is a huge, huge swing piece for the Warriors that they would love to have. And it just depends on how many picks they put into a deal to get Trey Murphy. Jonathan Kuminga going to the Warriors, going to the Pelicans in this trade proposal. And then this is all, by the way, SpaTrac certified. Shout out to SpaTrac and their trade machine. It's phenomenal. And with all of the Keith Smith help on this and all that they've done over at SpaTrac to make sure that this trade machine is up to date and all the bells and whistles in there with trading picks and making sure that it all is good. This trade works as well as the previous one. I think the Warriors would love to have Trey Murphy, but they're going to have to give up a bunch of their first round picks. And so 2026, you do a swap in 27. And then the 2032 is obviously the most valuable one there because it's further on down the road. And when you're talking Steph Curry and Draymond Green, the further you on getting on down the road, the better. And that's what the Clippers are feeling right now with the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander picks that they put in there, is that further on down the road, you just don't know what your team is going to look like. And the Thunder are pretty happy that they have one of those Paul George picks down the road. So this one's another fake Jimmy Butler trade proposal with the Pelicans. Dan, any quick thoughts on this one?
Yeah, just that Zion... Well, the jewel of this one really is Trey Murphy, who has, I think he was pretty high up relative to the Pelicans' record in All-Star voting. Like, I think people are aware, increasingly aware around the league, like, oh, this guy's on the ascent, big shooter who can do more with the ball in his hands, has defensive potential that's really as yet untapped to some degree. But like, that guy's somebody that if you could get him for a song, that would be huge. And then, or even like a fair price, what is a fair price for a guy like that? And the Pelicans, I think, are aware of that. You've got multiple sourced reporters, whether it was Brian Windhorst or I think Chris Haynes had something on it. I know our guy Shamit Dua down in New Orleans had mentioned it as well. Like the Pelicans are representing that they are not interested in moving Zion at this point. However, if he comes attached, or if the package coming back your way is like a ton of draft capital and, a potentially super helpful present tense guy or Jimmy Butler in the near future, 11 months or so down the road, that's interesting, I think, to some degree. The point about your picks down the road, Mike Dunleavy Jr. also talked about that in the press conference. I think, let me get the quote so I make sure I have it right. He said, quote, "If we're talking about trading picks that will be going out when Steph isn't here, it's going to have to be a player that we think we'll be getting back that's going to be here when those picks are going out." So I think translation, again, maybe all this is spin, maybe it's all negotiating and leverage, but 32-year-old Anthony Davis doesn't quite line up with that. 25-year-old Zion Williamson, early to mid-20s Trey Murphy, that does feel more like that's the kind of runway you're looking at. What seeds the ground for the post-Steph version of the Warriors, whatever the next competitive iteration of Warriors basketball is? Can it help us now and then potentially give us the runway to the future? I don't want to invoke the haunted phrase two timelines, but I would say that that's the idea here, right? If you are going after, if you're going big game hunting now, you're doing that for younger guys, prime age guys, or guys approaching their prime. that's what those draft picks go out for. And I think that's, we will probably see more of that in the trade ecosystem in the current NBA as it exists. Like, you're seeing teams having a hard time getting off of late 20s, early 30s stars who we've seen the best of them. We're probably not going to see the best of them moving forward for multiple picks, right? Like, that's not the package that's going to get you a handful of firsts anymore. It's more likely to be a guy who's in that prime age, under control for several years, that you can then see some runway with. So Zion is, I'm super in the tank for Zion as a, like, every time I watch that guy, I'm like, just give me 70 games. I just want 70 games of that. Can I ever get 70 games of that? If you give me that plus Trey Murphy as a plan for now and moving forward, whew, I could be into that. I could be into that.
Well, there are other pathways. One is they just kind of say, let's revisit this offseason. And that Jimmy Butler expiring contract becomes a lot more valuable this offseason. And for the Pelicans, like, do you make a deal now to just make sure that you have a pick in this upcoming draft, right? The 2026 draft, and the Warriors would have a pick to give them. It would be in the back half, presumably, of the first round, but it is a pick. But I do think that the Jimmy Butler, it's going to be $56.8 million expiring deal next year. So if you're a team like the Pelicans or the Mavs or another team that wants to offload long-term money, perhaps Jimmy Butler's expiring contract becomes a lot more valuable. And maybe the Warriors wouldn't have to give up a 2032 pick, right, in order to facilitate that deal, because the expiring deal becomes a lot more advantageous. So we'll see. But the Warriors are playing basketball games right now, and they're going to have to figure out in the next 3 weeks-ish, 2 weeks, the trade deadline, February 5th, they got to figure this out. Mike Dunleavy said, I want to see how this team looks over the next 2 weeks. So let's take a break here to talk about what the Warriors right now, what is in front of them right now ahead of the trade deadline. We'll drill down a little bit more on the Warriors right after the break. All right, Dan, this week's big number, 3-6. That's the Warriors' record without Jimmy Butler since they acquired Jimmy Butler. I know it's kind of like an oxymoron, but yeah, without Jimmy Butler, they're a 27-win team pace in a 9-game sample size and got embarrassed on Tuesday night. One thing on this, the Mike Dunleavy press conference that happened on Tuesday, I remember when reports were that the Warriors were not interested in trading for Jimmy Butler and did not want to extend him on his contract. And then, like, 10 hours later, both of those things happened. So I'll believe it when I see it that the Warriors don't do any moves at the deadline here to upgrade and keep this championship contention. I'm not saying winning the championship, but give Steph a chance and Draymond a chance together one last time. Dan, how do they do that? Like, what are some holes that they need to fill here going forward for the Warriors without Jimmy Butler?
Yeah, so our first little number this week kind of hits on that. It's 108.3. That's the Warriors' offensive rating when neither Steph nor Jimmy are on the floor this season, according to Cleaning the Glass. Offensive rating is how many points you score per 100 possessions. That means that without your two best players on the floor, if you're the Warriors, you're scoring a little over 108 points per 100 possessions. The worst offense in the NBA this season, which belongs to the Tyrese Halliburton-less Pacers, scores about 109. So without Steph or Jimmy on the floor, you are scoring like below the worst offense in the NBA. And the problem that you have here on a very basic level is that Stephen Curry can't play 48 minutes a game. So he's going to have some time off, and he might miss a game or two here or there because he's, you know, 37 years old, and that happens. And so the issue that you've got if you're the Warriors is like, how do you generate even like regular bad offense might be okay in those minutes. Like, you can maybe stay afloat if you play really good defense and, you know, you've got Draymond wreaking havoc and GP2 all over the place and Brandon Podziemski gets a, you know, a pick six or whatever, something like that. But even like regular bad offense would be fine. Right now, they can't even generate worst in the NBA offense with no Steph or no Jimmy. And so that's, to me, like the big glaring bright red lights thing is there a way with the ingredients in the cupboard right now for Steve Kerr to find that in those non-Steph minutes? Or does that mean you've got to go outside the house and go shopping?
Yeah, I think you go shopping for sure. Pods looked really good lately, and I feel like he could be the anchor of that second unit. But a lot of those great Pods minutes over the last few games were with Jimmy Butler by his side. And when you see no Jimmy Butler out there, it changes the whole dynamic, especially like if Jonathan Kuminga is subbing in for Jimmy Butler. It's hard to find players who have two polar opposites skill sets in terms of what they bring to the table. Jimmy Butler, when he's on the floor without Draymond and Steph, so when he's anchoring that second unit, the Warriors this season are plus 127 according to PBPstats.com. And when Jimmy Butler comes off the floor, that goes from plus 127 to minus 8. Just showing you that he is a floor raiser. It's not just that he raises the ceiling, like you said earlier, Steph, Draymond, Jimmy, that's a trio that can compete, right, at the highest levels. But the domino effect of losing Jimmy is that he can't anchor that second unit anymore. And without that, that's where I feel like all of the leaks are just springing all over the place for this Warriors team. And in order to get 25 percentile offense, I just don't know if Pods is there yet, or Moses Moody is there yet, Kuminga is there yet. So I kind of feel like that is the biggest issue, is that he is such an important second unit facilitator. The offensive rating with Jimmy Butler and no Steph and Draymond is 122. 122 with no Steph or Draymond on the floor, but Jimmy Butler at the helm. So it's just everywhere you look, this is a devastating blow for the Warriors. And so the offensive end is huge for Jimmy. Defense is great, but the offense, what he did as the stabilizer, amplifier, it all goes out the window. And I just think you got to go for a guy like Zion or Trey Murphy or AD, someone who can create that offense without needing Steph or Draymond on the floor is huge. So yeah, I do think they have to go shopping.
Yeah, then the other number to note of that is it's like it would be unreasonable to expect Jonathan Kuminga to do that. Even if Kuminga had been like in the rotation and, you know, playing at a high level, like Jimmy Butler, as we said, top 15, top 20 player in the world. Like you can't just expect someone to step in and replicate that production. Over the last two seasons, 655 minutes with Kuminga on the floor and no Steph or no Jimmy. So neither of those two guys and Kuminga's on the floor. That's like his time to cook, right? Where he gets to actually handle the ball and create and whatever. 655 minutes minus 116 in that floor time. That to me is not an indication that like Jonathan Kuminga sucks. It's just like expecting someone to be able to anchor the offense at a level that a Steph Curry or a Jimmy Butler does when you are not one of those guys. Like it's not going to work. So yeah, that is the number one job. Number one is figuring out what do you do offensively in those no Steph, no Jimmy minutes. I think little number two, easy for me to say. It's a pretty big number. 27,678,571. That's how many dollars Draymond Green stands to make next season if he picks up his player option for 2026-27. Draymond's offensive decline has continued. He's under 9 points and about 5 assists per game, shooting 43% from the floor, missing 2/3 of his threes, taking a career low share of his shots at the rim. People barely guard him on the perimeter. That's been true for years. Still an awesome defender, heartbeat of a top 10 defense, but this is the first time since year one of the KD era that the Warriors' point differential is worse with Draymond on the floor than off it. And it's just the second time since his rookie season that that's been true. So as we talk about the idea of blockbusters and big swings and fundamental changes to what this Warriors team looks like, is it possible, is there a world in which it's possible that the fundamental changes, we want to try to see what we can get for Draymond before he has the chance to pick up that option?
I just don't see it. I don't see them moving on from Klay and Draymond and just going with Steph Curry and a bunch of new characters around him. I just don't see it at this point. Steve Kerr is in his last deal of his coaching tenure with the Warriors at this point. If you move off of Draymond, does that change things for Steve Kerr? Obviously, they've had their headaches and disagreements over the years, but I think that Draymond does so much for them defensively, does so much for them with Steph in terms of like belief that Steph can look at Draymond and see the championships that they won together and know that I've got someone in my corner at all times. I feel like Draymond, he is the 16-win guy. Like he always likes to say, they're 82-game win players and 82-game players, and then there's 16-game players, meaning I think Draymond, if you're trying to win a championship or have a deep postseason run, I think the Warriors just want to fast forward to the playoffs, fast forward at mid-April, and then they get Draymond Green and all the headaches and all of the missed shots and all of the turnovers, whatever it is in the regular season. You kind of wash that away and you have Draymond Green on your team next to Steph Curry in the postseason. And it's hard for me to believe that the Warriors would move off of both Klay and Draymond. But like you said, I didn't think that they would move off from Klay in the first place. So I think he, at his number next year, I just don't know what he's going to garner in the open market. So I suspect that you're going to see Draymond Green stay as a Warrior through this trade deadline. But it is an interesting thought. Is at this point, does the front office just decide, look, we're going to try this completely reinventing the wheel around Stephen Curry? I probably would not do that because of that relationship with Stephen Curry and what the belief that Steph Curry has in Draymond. But if Steph Curry's like, yeah, I want to move in a different direction, then maybe the Warriors entice that.
I think that's completely reasonable. And, you know, Draymond has as big a share of anybody that's not Stephen Curry or Steve Kerr in that, as you mentioned, that like $11 billion valuation for the Warriors, according to Forbes. Like these guys have ownership in what this has become, right? And so the idea, it was kind of heartbreaking and unthinkable that Klay would not finish out his tenure as a Warrior. The idea of Draymond walking out into the sunset with Steph or walking out into the sunset with Kerr or whatever, there's something, you can imagine that, right? And so then that brings me to, Mike Dunleavy Jr. is saying, we don't envision trading Jimmy. We envision him like, you know, the average return time for an ACL tear is like 11 months, I think. Jeff Stotts at In Street Clothes had said. So he comes back around Christmas, something like that. And then we got a run next year. So imagining that that's true, taking him at his word for whatever that's worth. And it's like, well, we don't want to move Draymond because we think he matters for those kind of moments. And Steph is still Steph. And Jimmy comes back next season. Is it possible that maybe the stand pat plan is the one they go with, which brings us to our third and final little number this week, 82.8%. That is, as of Wednesday morning, the likelihood that the Warriors will make the 2026 playoffs, according to Basketball Reference's projections. Similar projections at dunksandthrees.com has them at 78%. ESPN's Basketball Power Index has them at 68%. The Warriors are 25-20 in eighth place in the West. They are 5 games clear of 11th and just 2.5 games out of 6th, only 3 games out of 4th in the West. Now, obviously, the teams that are ahead of them, they're playing great. They're winning basketball games. The teams below them, some of them, you know, your Portland Trailblazers that you are on the coverage there for, they've been red hot recently. They're climbing up the standings. There's at least a chance that the Warriors could not only find themselves staying in the play-in tournament, but like dropping down into that 9-10 spot as opposed to staying up in the 7-8. There's a lot in flux. There's half a season left. But if you're looking at somewhere between like 2/3 to 85% likelihood that you make the playoffs, even as it stands right now, in a non-Jimmy context, is that enough for the Warriors to say, like, let's see, you know, get him next time. We believe that if we do get to April 2027 with Steph, Jimmy, and Draymond on the floor, that's the real best chance we've got of a title winner. And then to like doing anything else right now that takes that, with it wouldn't bring us to that same level or a higher level, it wouldn't be worth our while.
I mean, do we know that Jimmy Butler's coming back?
Oof.
I mean, he's the second oldest player to have an ACL tear in Jeff Stotts' database since 2005. Second oldest player to have an ACL tear. The oldest was Birdman, Chris Anderson, was 38, and he didn't play again. So Jimmy Butler, in this scenario of like, hey, let's just come back next year. He's under contract with us for another year. We'll see how things go. I mean, yes, I think he does come back, but there is a possibility, a non-zero chance, that Jimmy Butler's career is over. And I think that is the risk that the Warriors are taking here, is that the ACL injury, it's going to take a while for him to get back to full strength. And so even if he does come back, what type of player? And then at that point, Steph Curry and Draymond are a year older, right? So yeah. I think that's why the calculus for me is make a move now and get a younger player like a Zion, that can help bridge the gap. And so even if Steph and Draymond hang it up after next season, which I don't think is going to be the case, you can say, all right, we, at least we have a piece, a player that we can fill some seats in with Chase Center, at least someone that we can bank going forward. Because right now, I don't think of the two timeline guys, any of them you can bank on them being a centerpiece of this franchise in the post-Steph era. So that's why I just think it's incumbent on the Warriors to figure out a way to use that Jimmy Butler contract to try to bring in a player. So yes, they're able to make the playoffs with pretty good certainty this season, but in terms of actually contending, I just think that that chance is just about zero right now.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest swing in all this, the decision maker who should get to make the decision or close to it is Stephen Curry, right? Like the question is, if Steph is the one, if Steph is going to, has the question presented to him, do you want to turn Jimmy Butler into whatever we can turn him into right now and give you a better chance right now, this season? Or would you rather say, I'm going to bet on Jimmy, you know, being the maniac that Jimmy is and getting back here in a year as good as he was before he left, which was, again, all NBA level kind of production for Jimmy Butler this season, and take your shot, even if it's, you know, you might be a hamstring or a tweaked muscle or a whatever away from falling short of your goal again. But like, that's the army you want to go to war with, for lack of a better term. Like, I wonder what Steph's answer to that would be. I would be fascinated to learn what Steph's answer to that would be. And I would be interested to see if the answer that he gives isn't one that the Warriors brain trust likes, if they decide to go another route. That would seem like a poor suggestion, a poor idea to, you know, look the savior of the franchise in the eye and say, actually, we're going the other way. But listen, pressure and difficult times can cause some interesting things to happen and things to unravel weirdly. So fascinating few weeks for the Warriors and maybe a few months ahead. I think that I'd written about this yesterday at Yahoo Sports. It's a whole big column up there you could read. Like, this has a chance to be a real inflection point for Golden State as a franchise. Like, the Warriors, as we have come to know them in recent vintage, the next time that they are competitive again, it could be a very, very different looking team. And if that is the latter stage of Stephen Curry's career, that is something of like dramatic, significant NBA historical relevance for all of us to keep an eye on.
You mentioned the trade deadline here in a couple of weeks. One name that everyone's going to be looking at, especially the ones in the Big Apple, is Karl-Anthony Towns. We haven't kind of thrown him into the mix of potential moves for the Warriors, but certainly fits the same profile as Anthony Davis and Zion Williamson, as long-term money that maybe a team would want to move off of if he is indeed a disgruntled star there in New York. We're going to talk about the Cat situation in New York since winning the NBA Cup, which feels like 6 months ago. We're going to talk about all that coming up after the break. All right, the news in Golden State does seem pretty dire with Jimmy Butler out for the season with an ACL injury, but there's another team in the Eastern Conference that feels like a pretty dire situation. New York, what a roller coaster, Dan. Just like a month ago, was on top of the NBA, won the NBA Cup, and it felt like Mike Brown was the greatest coaching hire in years, and was steering the Knicks into this new place where, yeah, Tom Thibodeau got him got the team to a certain point, but to take them to the mountaintop, Mike Brown out here ready to do it. And now the Knicks are sliding. And Karl-Anthony Towns, I remember this quote from earlier this season, I guess actually preseason. Karl-Anthony Towns was asked about Mike Brown and how he feels about the offense and da da da. And he just sat there and said on the press conference, he said, honestly, I don't know. I don't know how it's going to be. I don't know, but we're figuring it out. This was preseason, when hope springs eternal, Dan. You know how every training camp across the NBA, everybody's optimistic. There's everything smelling like coming up roses. Everything feels great. Yeah, got this new coach. I'm going to totally back him and support him. Miss you, Tibbs. But yeah, Mike Brown's our guy now, and really excited about things going forward. Karl-Anthony Towns was not saying the company line. He was not doing that in the preseason. And I kind of had that stuck in my head. and watching the NBA Cup and how well they played, I was like, oh, that was just preseason. Something he just wasn't vibing with the offense then. But Dan, now it feels like I'm reading into that quote a lot more these days, and how Karl-Anthony Towns fits in the Mike Brown offense and just in the general ecosystem with the New York Knicks. Karl-Anthony Towns doesn't seem like a great situation, Dan.
It does not, and it's because the slide and slump that we talked about on this show, the post-NBA Cup hangover, continues in New York. The Knicks are now 7-11 since the NBA Cup. They've lost 9 of their last 11 games. They have tied for the worst record in the NBA in that span, 22nd ranked offense in that 9 losses of 11 games stretch. And like, that's, the defense has been terrible. We talked about that last time we discussed the Knicks, the downturn in getting stops. The whole theory of the case for these Knicks is they're going to outscore you. They're going to be a lethal offense with Jalen Brunson on the ball and Karl-Anthony Towns space on the floor and getting downhill and all those wings and corner three-point shooters and yada, yada, yada. So they've been bad offensively. And so if you're not getting stops and you're not scoring, you're going to lose a lot of games. They got their doors blown off on Martin Luther King Jay by the Mavericks. The Mavericks team that was without like half of its rotation. They gave up 75 points in the first half. They had Mike Brown cursing after the game, which he doesn't like to do in front of the cameras. But
did he bring his laptop out though, Dan? Did he bring out the laptop?
He didn't bring his laptop out. Maybe not even at halftime, because here's the quote. At halftime, we usually do the clips and talk about technical X's and O's, all that crap that coaches and teams do. There was nothing to be said at halftime except for lock in and do your effing job. And the Knicks did not do their effing jobs. They got, again, blown out by the Mavs. This prompted Jalen Brunson to, according to Ramona Shelburne of ESPN, call a players-only team meeting after that loss. Brunson's message to teammates was, quote, the Knicks needed to find answers for their poor play in January among themselves rather than look to the coaching staff for solutions. Brunson was concerned enough about the situation to call the meeting and make clear to his teammates that the answers were to be found within the walls of the locker room. So this is the kind of thing that makes you wonder, like, well, what's going on inside the walls of that locker room? Whom is disgruntled in this situation? Which I think you go back to that preseason quote with Kat, and Kat becomes a lightning rod for a lot of the frustrations of Knicks fans. Inconsistent production. The shooting numbers have been down all year. The scoring numbers are down. He's under 20 points per game over the last month. And you've got like weird turnovers and bad turnovers and situations where like he drives to the rim and play against the Kings last week was emblematic of it. He drives to the basket, loses the ball seemingly without being touched or fouled, doesn't get up after the ball goes down the other end of the court. The Knicks actually force a miss and could potentially get a run out basket the other way. Towns has never even crossed half court to get back into the play. So then the Kings get an offensive rebound, another chance to score, and Towns never gets past half court the whole time. And so this is the kind of stuff that Mike Brown called it out after the game, like that's poor leadership. Like you need to get up, you need to get back in the play. And you're just sort of seeing more and more instances at this point of the Knicks and Towns, it's something seeming to be disconnected there. And it's been specifically notable. You could see it in the numbers too over the last month. And I thought this was sort of interesting. Dunks and threes, we talk about them a lot on the show, track a player's estimated plus minus game by game, not just full season, but game by game. Before the NBA Cup final, Towns had 3 negative impact performances in 24 games. Since the Cup final, 9-16. And so
I think he's checked out, man. I think he's checked out.
And this is, it shows up in the reporting, right? And the things that other people are saying, like Ian Begley at SNY, this group is not tied together in the way that their early season success would suggest. Players haven't fully bought into their roles under head coach Mike Brown. Not saying which players, but just heads up. By the way, just FYI, the one person who has said specifically time and again that he's the one that has to make the biggest sacrifice in Mike Brown's system is Karl Towns. Steve Popper at Newsday says that the Knicks have reportedly discussed Towns' deals with multiple teams, the Magic, the Hornets, the Grizzlies. James Edwards at The Athletic saying, if New York continues its free fall, it would not stun me if Karl-Anthony Towns got traded. I wouldn't bet on it, but it's something I'm monitoring. It's getting louder out there.
Very loud.
And so to your point, though, like when you look at You look at the numbers, you look at the tape, you look at the X's and O's, you try to figure out why is a team that was 23-9, that was, I think, second in the league in offensive efficiency, that was up in the top half of the league in defensive efficiency. Yes, they were giving up a lot of threes, but generally speaking, the defense was above average in that first 30, 35 games. Why is it all falling apart now? We do numbers more than vibes on this show, but checking out seems like a pretty reasonable answer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it didn't seem like he was bought in to begin the season, right? They did win the NBA Cup, which, by the way, not great for the NBA Cup prestige that a team could be this much into the tank after winning the NBA Cup. And you got they didn't want to raise a banner. And by the way, Jimmy Dolan is coming out with his first interview, and then the Knicks have their worst stretch in years, is not the best look either. So Karl-Anthony Towns, the stat that I have here is since December 29th, when a lot of these losses started piling up, Karl-Anthony Towns is leading the NBA in fouls. And with 44 in those games, and he has 8 blocks in those games.
Yeesh.
5.5 fouls per block is Karl-Anthony Towns defensively for the Knicks. It's bad. It's bad. And when you're looking at Karl-Anthony Towns, again, the offense has to be elite in order for you to make up some of the defensive deficiencies that he has. And that was the MO. Is, remember last year, this time he was averaging 25 points a game. When we were doing the over-unders last year on this show, we were like, wow, this Karl-Anthony Towns, Jalen Brunson is the best scoring duo in the NBA. You aren't hearing a lot about that right now. You're not. You're not. Because Carl has been rough. Jalen Brunson's doing players-only meetings, and you kind of feel like a lot of this is swirling around number 32 there. And it was a really cool story last year, coming back home to New York. They won the NBA Cup this year. It just feels like it's run its course, and maybe everything is fine over there in New York, that locker room, but it doesn't feel like it. And when a guy is that talented offensively but can't find a role under the new head coach, it feels like he's trying to take a stand on something, not running back on defense, not defend rim protecting. And I watched a bunch of those blocks that he does have over that span. They're more steals than blocks. He's not walling up and defending the rim like he should be. And so
swipe down, just
the swipe downs, the steal block. The Andre Iguodala, the classic Andre Iguodala block, where it's just maddening. If you're trying to go up on a layup on Iguodala, he just swipes it away. It just, man, this feels like it happened quickly, didn't it? That the Knicks are now a laughingstock of the league again.
Well, yes. And this feels... No, like, again, I was with the Knicks for a lot of last postseason. You know, I was with here in New York through their playoff runs, and then I was out with them in Indianapolis during the Pacers series. When things were going poorly in that run, there was a lot of like, yeah, we're just not locked in on the scout. You know, you'd hear Mikal Bridges would say it. Mikal Bridges, who, by the way, is, he will always come up for a lot of criticism because they were all the draft picks that went out for him, but if he is not scoring his 15 to 17 points per game and then generating some steals, like it becomes loud. But you know, he was talking about it. Josh Hart's talking about it. Multiple guys saying, you know, yeah, it just seems like we're, you know, guys aren't locked in on what we need to be doing, what we need to be executing. And the implication, which I think was later reported by Fred Katz and James Edwards of The Athletic, like that was about Kat. Like a lot of that was about Kat. Being like he's not doing the right things out there, and that doesn't necessarily seem to see what the problem with that is. That's not one coach versus another coach. That's not did you get the right bench players around, whatever. Like that's a fundamental issue, right? That is a central fundamental issue at the heart of your team. And this, there, you know, there's ways you can mitigate it. And the idea was like, big wings who are elite defenders and Mitchell Robinson, and hopefully that's enough. And it turns out maybe that isn't. And that predates Mike Brown. You're right to note, like 30 games in, it was everything that the Knicks were hoping to get out of a new hire, they were getting. The dribble, Jalen Brunson wasn't dribbling the air out of the ball. The ball was moving around more. Things were moving faster. The offense was a little bit more egalitarian and democratized. The defense was more versatile. You were having more opportunities for young guys to get in play. Mike Brown didn't stop being that coach over the last 3 weeks. It seems like something else might be at the heart there. And like, it is possible that maybe, you know, there's something in the locker room where Mike Brown is not, his message isn't getting through. There was maybe perhaps a rupture there with him and the locker room. I don't know the answer to that question. You know, we'll find out when we find out, I suppose, as far as what the situation is there. But it does seem that a lot of this comes back to the team that was put together and constructed to be this overwhelming offensive team isn't clicking. The pieces are not fitting together in the way that Leon Rose intended them to, in a way that predates the new coach that seems to have gone back to last season. And the guy that comes in for a lot of criticism on that is Carl Towns. And if that continues, if the play doesn't get better over the next couple of weeks, and if the specific ways in which it has been bad, bad offense, disjointed, or bad defense, disjointed offense, and Towns not looking like an all-NBA player, the drumbeat to move him, I think, is going to get louder and louder ahead of the trade deadline. And then the question is like, well, then what the hell do the Knicks do? Because this is it. Like, this was the whole thing. We're going at it right now this season. And this is the team, the structure with which they intended to do it. I don't know that you're getting a cat for Giannis deal at this point. I don't know if the Bucks are like excited to do that. If this is what Karl Anthony Towns has looked like, I don't think they were getting excited about that period, let alone if this is what Karl Anthony Towns looks like right now. So it's a mess. It's a mess on both ends of the floor, pretty widely spread. There's a lot of people that should come in for criticism here, but a lot of it does seem to be focusing on Towns, and he doesn't seem to be particularly excited about the way things are going himself.
No, I think you can throw out the whole Giannis Antetokounmpo trade right now. Like I don't think with Carl playing this way that you're going to see Milwaukee being like, you know what, that's the guy we want to build around going forward. Right. Like if we're going to trade Giannis, we want Carl Anthony Towns. I think maybe if he was playing peak Carl Anthony Towns, you could talk yourself into the Bucks being interested. But it's the worst of both worlds. Is now Carl Anthony Towns has been playing so poorly for you that he doesn't have the kind of trade value that you could get Giannis. And now you're kind of stuck with Carl Anthony Towns. So this is not worst case scenario, but this is kind of what you worry about if you're the New York Knicks in trade talks with potentially getting Giannis, is you got to make Carl Anthony Towns happy, because the better that he plays, the more likelihood that you are getting Milwaukee interested in a guy like Carl Anthony Towns. But if he's not playing at a high level, I don't know if any team is calling you for that guy who, by the way, is on the hook for another two seasons after this one at a very steep price. So Giannis Antetokounmpo is at $54 million this season. Carl Anthony Towns is at $53 million this season. But after this year, Carl Anthony Towns making $57 million, and then he's got a player option for $61 million in the following year. So after this season, you got two more years at about $60 million, and you're probably going to look at having to make an extension off of Carl Anthony Towns. He's going to want that too. If you're the Milwaukee Bucks, I don't think you're interested. I don't think he might have been interested in the first place, and the Knicks don't have the picks to make you whole in the event that Carl Anthony Towns does take a step back. So I just think that the Giannis and Carl Anthony Towns trade talks are dead, if they even were alive to begin with. I just think the way that Carl Anthony Towns is playing now, you can kiss that goodbye. So what do you do now? If you're the Knicks, I think you're kind of stuck. The way that the Carl Anthony Towns contract looks right now, paying $60 million for the next 2 years, essentially, the Phoenix Suns, do you call them up and say, let's reunite Devin Booker and Carl Anthony Towns from the Kentucky days, their boys from way back when? No, because the Phoenix Suns are like, we're good right now.
Yes.
You know, we're fine. We don't need to rock the boat with Towns the way that we're defending, with the way we're playing on both ends of the floor. We don't need that guy. Maybe a couple months ago, you could talk yourself into Carl Anthony Towns to Phoenix to try to revitalize that team, but they're fine without him. So I just feel like the number of suitors for Carl Anthony Towns is dwindling by the day. And ultimately, this is the bed that the New York Knicks made, and now they got to sleep in it. So this is the city that never sleeps. So I guess you don't have to get in that bed. But Dan,
right now it feels like it has bed bugs right now. That's the problem. It was all good a month ago, but now it seems less so. But the good news is they're, according to Stephen Bondi at the New York Post, they're engaging in conversations on Gershon Yabusele. So turning his $5.3 million contract or whatever into something else. That's all it's going to take. You know, crisis averted, no more players only meetings. Salvation lies ahead.
It's such a long season. It's such a long season in the NBA because remember when that bench unit was supposed to be just unstoppable, the best bench in the NBA? And the Jordan Clarkson minutes have not been great lately. It's just, man, the NBA happens fast. That'll do it for this show, Dan. We got the trade deadline coming up in a couple weeks. We'll be right back here on the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel again next week. Check us out on that. And please subscribe where you can get Kevin O'Connor's show, The Dunker Spot, all on the Yahoo NBA new YouTube channel. So please subscribe to that. Go hit that smash that subscribe button over wherever you listen to the podcast. Rate us 5 stars, please, and leave a review. Thanks to Emmy, Sarah, and Ryan, and the entire squad behind the scenes for making this pod a reality. We have a big staff behind us to do the big number, and big ups to you guys. Thank you so much. We'll be back again next week with another episode of The Big Number. Talk soon.